And that's one of the sort of teachings of natural vision improvement, is that vision is fluid, not fixed. It changes all the time, depending on many different factors, some of which we've talked about today: how stressed I am, how relaxed I am, how much light there is, how dim it is. But the Bates method has given me tools for those moments when maybe I have the 20/30 acuity or the 20/40. What can I do to swing it back to 20/20 or 20/10?
Greetings and love, you beautiful humans. It's caffeine-free Ben Hardy, co-host of the show. This week, my co-host Mike and I invited Nathan Oxenfeld on to share how he used the Bates method, as well as meditation, yoga, and nutrition, to reverse his myopia and restore his vision, to the point where he no longer wears glasses or contacts and was able to get the corrective lenses restriction removed from his license. He's the founder of Integral Vision Improvement, where he now works with people from all over the globe to help them do the same. In this episode, Nathan shares some of the exercises employed through the Bates method, simple but effective exercises you can start doing today. He also reveals how he sets up his work environment to more closely resemble that of the outdoor natural world, and why that is so important for eye health. As a guy who has been wearing contacts since college, I am all in on this. 20/20 vision, here I come. Ready to see clearly again? Welcome back to Terrain Theory. Okay, we are live. Nathan Oxenfeld, welcome to the Terrain Theory podcast.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here. I'm excited to see what comes up in our chat today.
So are we. Yes, we are excited to see what comes up in our chat today. Nathan, let's hear a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So I'm a natural vision improvement teacher. I started all of this just on a personal level because I had vision problems from childhood, nearsightedness, and astigmatism. So kind of common refractive errors or blurry vision in the distance. So I was depending on glasses and contacts every day, morning to night. And that was just normal because a lot of my friends were doing the same thing. And I saw most other people kind of doing that. But it wasn't until like later on down the road into like college and things like that, where I was starting to learn about more alternative approaches, and specifically things like yoga and meditation and changing my diet and things like that to feel better and become healthier. But it just felt weird that like I was making all these changes in my life, but I was still like poking myself in the eyeballs every morning with pieces of plastic, you know, put my contacts in. And it's like, why isn't my vision changing? Why aren't my eyes improving? So that really just kind of led me down this whole journey of discovering the Bates method and trying to improve my vision by myself for a while with limited success. And then actually working with a vision teacher, Jerry Ann Tabor, who really kind of helped me go all the way through the process and eventually even trained me to become a vision teacher. And so I've been helping other people with it for 10 years now. I started in 2013. And so it's been a lot of amazing experiences, not only on a personal level of seeing my own vision change and improve for the better, but then to like watch all these other people go through the process and help other people achieve similar results.
Yeah, some of the testimonials. I mean, one of the things that drew me to you and prompted me to reach out was reading some of the testimonials on your website. And also everything that you mentioned right now is basically me. So poking myself in the eyes every morning because I have contacts. And as you see, Mike has readers on, and I'm at that point where I probably should be wearing them, but I'm stubbornly refusing. You mentioned the Bates method, and we're going to get into that. But first, let's just for the listener, and for us as well, like what causes our eyesight to go bad?
Yeah. So are you nearsighted, Ben?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And then Mike, farsighted?
I've always bragged about how great my eyes were until about a month ago. And I started having to rely on readers. And that's.
Right. Those are kind of the two ends of the spectrum when it comes to refractive errors is, you know, we can either become nearsighted where we have good vision up close, but then far away is difficult. And then farsighted, where it's not so much distance is the issue. It's like, I can't really read as far as close, or I have to hold things farther away. That being said, though, farsightedness does also affect distance vision. It's not just the near vision. But not everybody develops these things. Some people make it through life without refractive errors. And I think that's what kind of prompted Dr. Bates to study this, is he would actually study people who had no refractive errors. They didn't need glasses. And he would study them, and he would study their eyes and what their eyes looked like, how their eyes were behaving, what were their vision habits. And then he would compare that to his patients that would come to his clinic who had nearsightedness, farsightedness, astigmatism, cataracts, all these different vision problems, needed glasses and stuff. And he would just study their eyes and study them, and how do their eyes look? How are their eyes behaving? What are their vision habits? And he found some very stark differences. And the answer to your question, according to Bates, what causes both of these refractive errors and more is strain. So the kind of maybe old way I used to think about my nearsightedness was, I have nearsightedness, and that nearsightedness is causing me strain, right? So like, I would go to the eye doctor, get glasses, and now maybe the strain is a little reduced because I can see better, but I still am nearsighted. I still have this vision problem, and it's actually getting worse and worse year after year. So I think what Dr. Bates did is he kind of flipped that around, and he said, actually, you have this strain, this underlying strain, which is contributing to the nearsightedness or the farsightedness. And now the solution is not to just put glasses or contacts on. It's actually to look at that strain, the underlying root cause of the vision problem, and what can I do to change that? And how can I replace it, the habit of strain, with a habit of relaxation? And one of my favorite simple ways to other answer to that question is staring, because staring is a form of straining. So when Bates would study the people who had vision problems and needed glasses, their eyes were staring. They were very rigid. They barely moved. They weren't really blinking very much. And then he would look at the people who didn't need glasses, and their eyes were constantly doing these little micro adjustments, blinking a lot, shifting a lot. And that's a super simple way to look at this. It's like, lack of movement contributes to vision problems. And the more we can actually free our eyes up to start to shift and blink and relax more, maybe that'll have a positive effect on the vision problem.
That's pretty profound when you think about so many more health problems related to the body are also related to lack of movement. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But let's go back. So can you tell us a little bit about Dr. Bates and the Bates method? You mentioned him a couple times.
Yes. Yeah. Don't want to get too far ahead of myself, because maybe not everybody's familiar with it. And I know I wasn't. I'd never heard of any of this stuff. I thought the only thing I could do other than wear glasses or contacts was get laser eye surgery. So when I found about Dr. William Bates, and the whole method he created, which we now call the Bates method, it was like this kind of, secret path that I was like, oh, I didn't know this existed. I'm going to explore this. And so it all goes back to the late 1800s, early 1900s, to this New York eye doctor, Dr. William Bates. He lived from 1860 to 1931. And he started off just as like a normal eye doctor, going through the motions, sticking with the status quo. But he couldn't help but notice that pretty much every patient he prescribed glasses to would come back with complaints that they needed stronger glasses. And that made him feel very uncomfortable that he was this doctor trying to treat problems, but what the medicine he was dispensing was actually exacerbating the problem. Nobody wears glasses and then their vision problem is fixed. Mm. It's never happened. So he really wanted to find out, like, okay, this might help some people, but this might not be the ultimate solution to vision problems. So what else is out there? So then he really kind of broke out of the traditional model and started doing his own research at Columbia University. And since he was kind of challenging the status quo, and he was attempting to put forth this, he called it new ophthalmology. Old ophthalmology did not like that. You know, like they didn't like the boat being rocked. And so he got ostracized and stripped of his medical license and pretty much kicked out of the community, despite all these people attaining benefits and relief from vision problems and actually getting off of glasses and stuff like that. So he really was this pioneer, and really I consider him, you know, to be ahead of his time, to be really in the 1910s and 1920s, be, you know, really challenging, you know, the accepted theories and notions around how we deal with vision problems. And to this day, 100 years later, it still isn't fully embraced or accepted, and not even a whole lot of people know about it. So that's really where I feel like I come in, to just kind of at least let people know who Bates was, what the Bates method really is, the actual version, not what you find on the Wikipedia page, because you can search online for the Bates method and find a lot of negative press or things saying it's not backed up scientifically and things like that. So I just, you know, like to share the other side of the story and kind of share what I've learned about Dr. Bates and the impact that the Bates method has had over the past century.
Yeah, I love that. You know, he's treating, and you are treating, root causes. It's something that we come back to on this show so often. And we see allopathic medicine treating symptoms and glasses. I guess you would call it normal optometry, ophthalmology, or just treating symptoms. They're not treating the root causes. So, you know, you're saying the buzzwords that we love to hear and say ourselves on this show. So can you tell us, without giving too much away, like how you incorporate the Bates method into your practice, this integral eyesight improvement, and then how you're weaving in some of these other strategies and modalities to improve eyesight?
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of inspiration comes from my yoga background, because like I said, I was in college starting to get into yoga and meditation. And so right after I graduated, I went to an ashram and I went through a yoga teacher training certification at Integral Yoga Institute. So it's more commonly known as Yogaville in Virginia, but that the type of yoga that is taught there is integral yoga. And it's, you know, integrating all of the different parts. It's this very holistic approach. Because when I first started taking yoga classes, like at a gym or even at a yoga studio, a lot of times it was focusing on one branch, the hatha yoga, which is the different asanas and poses and stretches and maybe some pranayama, some breathing, you know, meditation. But what about the other five branches that I didn't know about? So until I went to the ashram and learned about all six branches of yoga, and how I realized, oh, I was really only working on one branch and I was kind of missing the others. So once I filled in the rest, then it felt like this more, it felt less like I am going to a yoga class for an hour, and it felt more like I am living yoga. Like my life is yoga. That's what I encounter with the vision work as well, is when I first learned about the Bates method, I was like, ooh, eye exercises. I'm going to, you know, do my eye push-ups and I'm going to strengthen my eye muscles, because I thought my vision was poor because my eyes were weak and I needed to kind of like take them to the gym and buff them up somehow. But that's not really what it is. The Bates method, you know, is much more about the inner vision and actually working on the relaxation piece as well with the whole nervous system. So I was kind of keeping it a little too physical and kind of eye exercise based at first. So that's like one branch of what I call integral eyesight improvement. But then there's also those five other branches that are kind of inspired by the branches of yoga, but I sort of translate them into the vision language as well. And then I invite people to look at the whole picture, you know, this holistic approach to eye care. So yes, we do want to address the physical eye organs and the eye muscles, the optic nerves, all that stuff. But what about the deeper pieces? You know, what about the emotional connection with your vision and your eyesight, or the effect of a trauma on the way that you see the world? You know, things like that, that eye exercises are just not going to touch. So, you know, bringing in all those other pieces is how I like to kind of guide people through this process, knowing that most people enter it through the physical branch, just like I did. But that's kind of my favorite part, is like watching people make those discoveries of like, oh, this is way more than just my eyeballs.
And you must, be seeing improvements in their lives well beyond eyesight.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Like people open up, they discover new parts of themselves, or sort of like hidden parts of themselves that they were afraid to see, or afraid to let other people see, you know, and yeah, like I've had some of my students still like change professions, you know, because they weren't following their passion or their dream. They were unfulfilled with their job, things like that. And they maybe wouldn't have seen that or acted upon that if it weren't for the help of some of the vision training work. So yeah, it's really neat to see the, you know, obviously I want to help people like see as clear as possible, but I also want people to think about like, what is that going to lead to? What will achieving, you know, better eyesight or more relaxed eyes, how will that actually impact my relationships, my interactions with people and my activities and passions. And yeah, so it's kind of a, like, once again, it's not like, hey, I'm going to go meet up with Nathan for a 1 hour vision lesson, you know, or I'm going to sit down and do 20 minutes of palming or something. It's like, no, I'm living my vision practice. My vision practice is my life.
Yeah. It's like the eyes become the windows to this mind, body, soul journey / improvement. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you give us an example of some like eyesight exercises that you advise or prescribe, and maybe one or two that the listener can try right now? Just a little taste of.
Absolutely. You know, not too long ago, I mentioned that big bad vision habit called staring. And so if that's one end of the spectrum, staring is we all probably know what that looks like and feels like when the eyes are kind of immobile. We're probably not blinking very much. We're not really moving the eyes much. We're kind of stuck in a stare. So the other end of that spectrum is the swing. And swinging is moving. And there's a really simple, there's many, many different ways we can approach the swinging concept or the swinging habit. But I think one of the easiest ways to start is the finger swing. And people can try this if they want, unless you're driving or something like that. But you just hold one finger right up in front of your nose. And I usually have it about like a fist's distance from my nose. So there's like a little space in between. But it should be close enough that when you close your eyes and you start to swing your head side to side, so it's kind of like you're shaking your head no very slowly, you can feel your finger, you can sense it right in front of your face, and you're holding it still. But do either of you get sort of the sensation that it kind of feels like your finger's moving?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And specifically, it's moving in the opposite direction your head turns. So your head turns left, finger swings right, head turns right, finger swings left.
Yeah.
Or a lot of times I'll invite people to, you know, imagine the finger going from the right cheek to the left cheek, or from the right ear to the left ear. And if you can kind of get that with the eyes closed, can you also get that with the eyes open? So you open your eyes, you're not looking at your finger, you're just looking into the distance, but in the foreground, there's that finger in the way. And does it literally look like it's swinging or moving?
Yes.
Yeah.
Nice. It may or it may not. Some people feel like, no, it's still, you know, I'm holding it very still, but that's just because their mind is still kind of staring. But It actually is going into your right peripheral vision and then into your left peripheral vision, and it's swinging through the middle. That's why it's called the finger swing. Yeah. We're learning how to swing the finger or swing a stationary object. So if you can do it with your finger right in front of your face, maybe you can also do it with your screen. So if you close your eyes and you just swing your head side to side, you know that your screen isn't actually moving on your desk, but from your perspective, it's like, oh yeah, it's like the screen looks like it's moving to the left when I go right, and then to the right when I go left. And then when I open up, can I actually see that? Can my brain perceive that as motion?
Yeah.
Because that can actually have a not only a very relaxing effect on the brain and the eyes and the nervous system, but it can actually initiate better focus, clear flashes, where all of a sudden the screen might actually look better because it's not stuck. When we stare at things, things blur out. But when things are in motion, we can actually focus on them better. But that's the long swing. You know, you were both moving your head in a large direction. So that actually leads to the short swing, or just your eyes doing what your head was just doing, right? So if your eyes are moving around on your screen, or yeah, eyes are moving from one side of the finger to the other, even though it's a much subtler or smaller movement, can you still perceive it as oppositional movement? In other words, you're not staring. And that's a spectrum for everybody. Usually people need to start with the longer swings to get it first, and then kind of refine their way down to the little itty bitty swings.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what I mean about the vision practice becomes your life, because it starts off as this thing like, I'm going to do the finger swing, you know, but then eventually it's like, I'm going to talk to Mike and Ben, and my eyes are going to be shifting between their faces on the screen, and I'm going to look at my webcam. And the whole time we've been talking, my brain has been perceiving motion, as even though I'm just sitting here on the computer. Whereas in the past, when I would look through my glasses or contacts, I'd be staring at the screen and I would have no perception of motion. It would all be very static.
Yeah. Yeah. So this seems like an easy exercise that a person could throw into their day at any time, any given time in the day, when maybe they're feeling eye strain or feeling like they've been staring. I can tell you that when doing the full head swing, when I looked back at the screen, I've got a Word document open, you know, black font on white background. And that just burst with clarity when I really focused on it, which was pretty cool. So
I know. And it's kind of counterintuitive, because you wouldn't think, like, in order to see the screen better, why would I want to look away from it? Like, it's like, yeah. Why would I want to move, you know, over here? But then you come back and it looks better.
Yeah.
As opposed to like the old way of thinking is like, oh, if I want to see the screen better, I better drill into it and I better just like, force it.
Yeah.
But what you just did is you disengaged, you sort of broke away from it and you swung it and then came back, and now it's fresh and it's easier.
Fun. So some of these exercises are things that you'll work into the clients that you work with. Yoga sounds like, meditation you mentioned. Did you say breath work as well?
Nutrition? Yeah. And real quick though, I just want to appreciate that Mike removed his glasses for the practice, right?
Right.
Like, and that's a little thing just to mention, is that all these vision practices ideally are done without glasses or contacts, so that you can see that effect of, whoa, my vision actually did kind of change just now. Because if the glasses are on, then it kind of fixes the eyesight to a certain level and it might not fluctuate quite as much.
Right. Got it.
But yes, it is... I invite my students to start their day with something like this. Like, before you get out of bed, like, don't even start your day, just in bed, head on the pillow, hold your finger up and just start swinging. And if you start your day with the perception of motion, when you get up out of bed and you go to the bathroom, you make breakfast and all that stuff, you're probably going to be picking up on more motion in your periphery as a habit. Mm-hmm. As opposed to waking up and just kind of starting your day in a stare. But like you said, it is really, especially with screen time. I found that other than like my morning routine, you know, doing the swinging first thing, the other main time I would do it is after maybe an hour on the screen, or really starting to feel like, oh, wow, I need to like break the stare. I feel the stare coming back.
Mm-hmm. Is part of the issue that we live in very static, we live and work and operate in very static environments. Like when we're in our home or in our home office, even if we're in an office space, we might be in a cubicle and we're not seeing, there isn't actually a lot of motion in our environment. Whereas when we're outdoors, which is the environment we probably should be spending more time in, like everything's in motion. There's almost no stillness whatsoever.
That is a wonderful revelation. The fact that right when you step outdoors, everything's moving. Right? The wind.
Everything.
The clouds. The water. You know, like
animals.
Yeah. It's a very dynamic world. And then we step inside and that's this artificial, rigid box. But it's funny because right when you were saying that, a car drove by behind my computer because I have my computer right in front of my window for that purpose. Mm. So that by the time we get to the end of this talk, I'm not going to be like, oh my gosh, I need movement, because not only do I have my window right there, but I also have a lava lamp over there. So the colored wax bubbles are moving in my periphery. I also have this Aurora light that I don't know if it'll show up in the background because it's daytime. Usually it's better at night, but it's just these moving colored lights.
Yeah.
And my whole monitor. So I have you two on video in a smaller window. The whole rest of the monitor has a YouTube video going right now of movement. It's like drone footage.
Yeah.
Or like there's a lot of people put hikes on YouTube where it'll be like a 3-hour long hike through a beautiful forest or something like that. So I'm sensing a lot of movement right now. But if the shades were drawn and the lights were off and the video wasn't going, I'd probably be much more susceptible to getting tunnel vision and kind of sucked into the screen. And then I would tune out my periphery. So I think the main kind of response to what you said is I want people to think about their peripheral vision and just kind of take stock of your space. And I agree with you. Most people's workspace and living space is quite static. And so you can get creative and kind of bring some actual moving things into your space. But remember what we did with the swinging. If you just sway in your chair right now, even if your whole background behind your screen is static, this immediately brings everything back into motion. So that's where we have the power to actually step in and say, you know what? I see a lot of staticness. There's not a lot of movement. So I'm going to move and I'm going to create the swing.
Or the things around you. I like it to liken it back to yoga where you started. It's almost like having your props. Like you start a yoga class off and you have your blocks or your rope or whatever. And so having a YouTube channel with a hike or obviously a window is a no-brainer, but lights that move around your room are simple things that anyone can do that we might take for granted as just simple aesthetics, but it's actually a way to improve your vision.
Yeah. And just to make that link, the way it can improve your vision is it keeps you out of the stare.
Yep.
And the less you're in the stare, the more dynamic and healthy your vision is.
I'm laughing to myself because my kids are always making fun of me because I'm often lost in thought and they're saying, oh, dad's staring at the wall again. Dad, how's the wall today, dad? So I'm going to try to keep a little more activity in my eyeballs when I'm lost in the wall from here on out.
Yeah. Yeah. Either that or just close your eyes and just fully go into your inner world, right? There's nothing wrong with that. Or, you know, that's another thing, you know, the Bates method teaches palming. So, you know, instead of staring at the wall, now your kids will be like, oh, dad's palming again. You know?
Yeah. Thanks for those. I'll get a lot of mileage out of that. Thank you.
I think what I'm taking away here is that we should all own more cats. So like the cat ladies, cat ladies don't wear glasses is probably the t-shirt you need to start selling.
I do need some new merch. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but that does, you know, it does make sense though, that if you have animals in your house that are moving around a lot, like that's another benefit to owning some pets.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Nathan, whose eyes can't be improved and why?
So there's kind of like a pretty low bar in terms of the threshold of who, pretty much where I draw the line is if you have no light perception. So if there's literally no light perception in one eye or both eyes, then we may not be able to improve the sight. But even if there is any form of light perception, something can be done. whether it's bringing eyesight back or just bringing more relaxation into that very strained system. But that, yeah, there's actually the one of the podcasts I do, the Better Eyesight podcast, there's a whole episode about blindness and how the Bates method has even helped people come back from blindness, because blindness is a spectrum. Mm. And they're not talking about people with zero light perception. They're talking about people with things like optic nerve atrophy or serious areas of vision loss or macular degeneration of these things where we're definitely like legally blind and maybe even just to the point of seeing forms and blurry shapes and stuff. But several of my students either have one eye that is kind of like non-functioning like that, where it's sort of written off by the eye doctor, like nothing we can do. And they're starting to get light perception back. They're even starting to see letters on the eye chart. It's temporary, comes and goes, but it's quite amazing how, there's a pretty low bar of entry and anybody can try this and see kind of what happens. But I think the other qualifying thing is sort of the mental state. Like, I think people who really are just very dismissive of this notion at all can't improve. You know, if they're like, you know, this isn't possible, then even if they try it, they probably won't see much. So that's also a common thread I see in people I work with, is they're really open to the idea of how their vision can be flexible and hopefully a little optimistic and have some kind of faith or belief in their own self-healing abilities.
Yeah, we see that, encounter that a lot, speaking to others in the like alternative health space, naturopaths and so on, that the harder patients to work with are the ones who identify with that label. You know, they start to identify with the quote unquote disease they might have. And I could see that too, just in the articulation. I am myopic, or, you know, rather than like, currently I have myopia, but I'm working on, you know, improving it. Like
I am a recovering myope.
Yeah, I like that. Yes. You know, so just that, starting with that, like you said, that mindset sounds, I believe it would be the crucial first step.
I can't look past either the fact that optometrist and optimistic have the same root in them.
Yeah. I never made that connection. Yeah. Because, you know, we're talking about the optics, right? Yeah. The optical system. So yeah, that's an interesting link there.
What about the link with nutrition? How does nutrition come into play?
So far, most of what we've talked about, I would put more in the category of vision improvement.
Okay.
Like replacing a staring habit with a swinging habit, or, you know, bringing more relaxation into the system so that you can see the screen more clearly, you know, like actually improve the vision. I look at the diet nutrition piece as almost more like vision maintenance. So like you might be having a really healthy diet, or maybe even taking certain supplements for the eyes and things like that, and it might not change your visual acuity. You know, it might not give you 20/20 eyesight, but it's going to nourish your lenses and your corneas and your optic nerves and the vitreous humor and all the different components that make up your eyes that need certain vitamins and minerals and nutrients. And if they don't have that, then their health can suffer. So I do see a role for it. It's not really my specialty, but I do encourage people to kind of look at that link. And if anything, I spend less time kind of advising people on what to consume and more about maybe what to avoid, just because of what we know, like the refined sugars can have effects on the little capillaries in the eyes. You know, in my yoga training, I remember them kind of talking about using this analogy of refined sugars as like shards of glass going through your bloodstream, making all these little micro abrasions that causes some inflammation. And, you know, that goes straight to the eyes. You know, your eyes can get sort of inflamed if that diet is off like that. So not to mention, you know, diabetic retinopathy is like one of the leading causes of blindness. So that's obviously linked with diet and lifestyle. So And also cataracts, sometimes there's links between the diet and things like that. So definitely a big piece to look at. And when you kind of have that going alongside with the vision improvement, you've got vision maintenance and vision improvement, then it's like the ingredients for success there.
Yeah. And while we're hyper-focusing, so to speak, there's the second pun of the episode. You mentioned blinking early on. It's something maybe we take for granted, but I was actually at a concert with my daughter a couple of days ago, and I was just sitting in the sort of the back row doing a little people watching. And I did notice some people have a propensity to blink a lot, and some people fall into that stare, like you mentioned. So would you say, if you're more of a starer and you notice that about yourself, that you should consciously try and blink more often, would that be beneficial for your eyeballs?
Yeah. You know, first of all, I appreciate how you're kind of doing what Dr. Bates suggested, which is to observe other people's eyes and observe how, and well, specifically he said, observe people's eyes who have perfect sight.
Right.
And then emulate that, you know, do what they're doing.
Right.
And so, but it's technically impossible to not blink. You can't not blink.
Right.
Like it's just, you just can't do it. So blinking is an automatic, effortless thing that we can't not do. It's unconscious. But if we have a really big staring habit, the blink rate is way too low. And it's probably filled with strain. This is when I first found the blinking section in Dr. Bates's book, I almost skipped right over it. 'Cause it's like, what? I already know how to blink. Like, what is this guy talking about?
Right.
But he was talking about relaxed blinking versus strained blinking. And I didn't realize that I probably had some strained blinking habits. And so, yeah, I did have to kind of start to play with some conscious blinking and specifically like, how do I blink very softly and very rapidly so that it doesn't cause any tension or strain? And yeah, I did. And specifically during screen time, that was like the main time I would really ramp it up. 'Cause I read statistics that said that screen time decreases blink rate. And the average blink rate is like maybe 15 to 20 a minute. So that's every like 3 or 4 seconds. So I would just consciously every 3 seconds, just make sure I interrupted my vision. Right. That's what blinking is. You're taking a quick pause. You know, it's like the movie stops for a second and then it starts over. Or sometimes it's like the frame rate on your screen, right? 24 frames per second or on a movie. And it looks like a continuous thing, but actually it's all these still images. And so it's kind of like what our vision's like. And the more we blink, it's like we're increasing our frame rate. And the more frame rate, the higher resolution the picture is. But we don't want to be sitting here, you know, constantly blinking unnaturally. So how do we find that balance where it's happening enough and it's happening in a relaxed way so that we can then let it become unconscious again? So we don't have to think about something like blinking, but during the process, we do want to kind of shine the light on it and say, I'm intentionally blinking. And I don't know about you, but I think when we don't blink, it's almost coming from this place of FOMO. Fear of missing out. Like if I blink, I'm going to miss something. And it's kind of a silly thought, but that's how I felt sometimes. It's like, I can't miss something. So I have to stare. Mm-hmm. But actually the more you blink, the more you see. It's kind of paradoxical that way.
Well, it makes me think a lot about social media videos and content that you get on social media, you know, new platforms like TikTok promoting shorter videos. And so you watch a 15-second, 30-second video, you know that there's something in there, a few things in there that you don't want to miss, you know, the whole point of the video. And so you're going to stare at it for 30 seconds and then that's done. Now you're going to move on to the next one. And now you're just in this like, you know, multiple minutes of not blinking because you're consuming 15, 30-second bites of things.
That's really interesting because, like when you sit down for a 90-minute movie, there's no way you could keep your eyes open for 90 minutes, but you definitely can keep them open for 90 seconds.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be comfortable, but you know, that screen is overriding your brain and kind of being like, prioritize this, you know, don't worry about your eyes, you know, just keep consuming this light through the screen. And so once again, that's another reason why, you know, palming the eyes or closing the eyes or intentionally, you know, going within and kind of not fully giving our creativity and imagination over to content creators, but actually staying connected with our own inner imagination and inner vision as well. So that we get to kind of enjoy the inner TikTok instead of like, you know, endlessly scrolling.
I like that. What's the difference between palming and just closing your eyes? Is it actually putting pressure on your eyeball that provides some relief?
Nope, no pressure on the eyes. Actually, I used to rub my eyes a lot when I was a kid.
Yeah.
It felt really good.
Right.
When I learned about the Bates method, I stopped touching my eyes. I stopped putting any pressure on my eyes. Once again, I stopped poking my eyes with my contacts.
Yeah.
I stopped rubbing my eyes with my fists. And palming is not putting any pressure on the eyes. It's cupping the palms to simply block the light. So you're creating total darkness.
Got it.
So Dr. Bates said closing the eyes is the first step. You know, sometimes just closing the eyes is enough to relax. You know, just closing the eyes, the brain, the eyes, the nervous system can start to calm down just from that. But your eyelids are very thin. Mm. So there's still a lot of light penetrating and still stimulating your retinas and your optic nerves and still sending those signals to the visual cortex in your brain. So when you palm, that takes it to a deeper level where now there's zero light stimulation on your brain.
Yeah.
And so it's more about achieving the darkness and the warmth.
Right.
To then kind of create sort of a blank canvas in your mind to then watch these movies we were just talking about of visualizing and working with the mental pictures. So it's not just about sitting in the dark and being bored. It's about actually turning something on in your brain that actually activates the visual process.
So I wear a sleep mask at night. It sounds like mm-hmm. I should maybe have that thing around and put it on at times throughout the day.
It's a good supplement to palming. It wouldn't really replace the palming because the skin to skin contact right. is important. And also since this is self-healing work, you're taking time to use yourself, your hands to put on yourself, your eyes with this intention of I'm doing this to feel better and to relax. And you can certainly do that with a sleep mask. You're like, I'm going to put this on to relax my eyes and you still get a lot of those same benefits. But I like it when people still do both.
Got it. So you've talked a bit about restorative methods. What about like prevention? You know, what are some lifestyle changes that the listener can make right now in their day? And you've mentioned some of them that I think could be incorporated, but lifestyle changes that would prevent their eyes from ever worsening.
I kind of wish more people would ask that question. Because I'd say 99% of the people that I talk to and I work with are, you know, they've already developed some imbalance with their vision and they're looking at how do I bring this back into balance? You know, how do I, quote, reverse this? But I really look at the Bates method as almost being a even more powerful prevention tool than reversal. And I think what I want to share is Dr. Bates's protocol for school children, because he was really keen on the next generation. You know, he kind of was like, you know, us adults, we've already all prescribed ourselves these glasses, but the kids, they haven't been, you know, tainted yet. So he actually implemented programs in schools where he would hang an eye chart up in the front of the classroom. So the chart would just be permanently fastened by the blackboard from day one of school. And every day in the school day, the teacher would take a short period of time and say, all right, kids, everybody from your desk, read the eye chart. There was no measurements, no 20 feet, no right or wrong answer. It was just look at the eye chart with your left eye. Now let's look at it with the right eye. Now let's read it with both eyes. And then let's get back to class, right? So it's not this big to-do. It's not like, oh, there's something wrong with you. We need to get you fixed. Every single day, within a week or two, and by the way, they weren't only looking at the chart from their seat. You know, obviously the kid, they're walking around, they're getting closer to it, they see it. It's not a secret.
Right.
Within 2 weeks, the kids know what the chart says. They have it memorized. So even if they're at a distance in their chair where the teacher draws something on the blackboard, some new material that is foreign and unfamiliar, and they don't know what they're learning, that causes mental stress and strain, and then the blur comes.
Yeah.
If they can go back to that familiar chart that they know what it says, and they can look at it and calm down their nervous system and actually bring the vision back by looking at the chart, then when they come back to the blackboard, they can actually see the blackboard better.
Wow.
So what I'm suggesting as a prevention method is if you put an eye chart up in your office, in your bedroom, in your house, wherever, read it once a day. You know, don't make it a test where you're like, oh, I have to perform and I have to succeed.
Yeah.
Even if it's blurry, that's okay. You already know what it says. That's why I made this chart alphabetical order. You already know what this says.
Yeah.
So if you can put it at a distance where maybe it's not perfectly clear, and yet you know in your brain that says A, B, C, D, E, that's what gets your vision to, you know, I'm kind of talking about the reversal right now where if it's blurry, you can use this to stimulate it. But if you don't have a vision problem, look at the chart 20 feet away, just read it. Reading the chart is the way to prevent vision problems.
Yeah.
It's this, you know, this sort of like use it or lose it kind of mentality. And then same thing for farsightedness, except with fine print, right? It's like, what, how tiny text are we looking at? You know, there's that thing of everybody, once they turn 40 or 50, they need reading glasses. It's the whole kind of use it or lose it thing. Cause usually around that time, we're also increasing the font sizes on our phones. And so if we go the other direction with it, or we kind of, you know, use the fine print as a way to preserve the reading vision, so it's kind of a twofold answer. It's sort of the same way we prevent things is the way we reverse them as well. But I just wish more people would think about their eyes and their vision before something starts changing, you know, and going south with it.
Sure. Yeah, I know. I mean, I noticed the eye charts over your shoulder on the back wall, and it immediately I was like, oh, that sounds like something I'm probably going to have to get after this conversation is an eye chart. I know this is going to come up in conversation.
Yeah. And you know, like, in like this comes up every August in the Better Eyesight podcast. The we're just reading the Better Eyesight magazines. Bates and his team published a magazine once a month for 11 years. And so every month we're just reading those original articles and then discussing them. And every August is the school edition. It's the kids edition. And so if people do want to kind of learn more about that, that's a kind of a good way to just look for the August episodes. And then it kind of fills out that whole thing about how Bates was trying to literally change the whole next generation. And the results were showing, like, the rates of myopia were going way down.
Wow.
You know, but obviously we don't see eye charts in classrooms today because the medical board came in and said, you can't have a medical instrument in a classroom.
God.
So here's your glasses back.
Right. So classrooms can't have eye charts.
You can't have a Snellen chart. The Snellen chart is the kind of standard one you see at the eye doctor, or the official eye chart. But classrooms are filled with signs and posters and text and letters and numbers. So like, there's definitely ways we can work around this, and like even just using the ABC chart or, you know, regular teaching tools, it's more about the protocol than the tool itself.
Sure. And I imagine there are sites out there that allow you to customize an eye chart and then have it sent to you, right?
Like, there's a website where you can type in whatever you want and then it kind of fills it in for you.
Got it.
I just made these in Word.
Yeah. So I'm going to do one that has in, you know, diminishing letters, cat ladies don't wear glasses. That's what it's going to read out. What are your thoughts on sunglasses?
You must have read my mind, because that was also going to be sort of a prevention thing that I was going to maybe bring up as well, is actually maybe reducing sunglass usage, or maybe switching to lighter tinted sunglasses. Because one thing that Bates said was that before you can improve any kind of vision problem, you have to overcome light sensitivity. And that resonated with me a lot because I used to wear sunglasses and I felt like I was quite light sensitive. And if you think about that, you know, why do you have two eyeballs in your head? It's to allow light to enter your body through them. And if that's uncomfortable, if you have to squint, if it hurts, if there's a fear of the light, that is kind of a fundamental imbalance or issue with the visual system. So that's important to look at, is how can I reduce my light sensitivity? In other words, how can I adapt my brain and my eyes to handle more light and brighter light? And switching from sunglasses to hats, or from dark tinted sunglasses to light tinted sunglasses, is a step in that direction of actually starting to retrain the involuntary muscles in your iris that need to constrict your pupils, because light sensitivity a lot of times is just your pupils are too wide open. Mm-hmm. You know, your eyes are too dilated. And if you wear dark sunglasses all the time, you're keeping your eyes constantly dilated. And, you know, you're inside in dim light, your eyes are dilated. You step outside with sunglasses, they're still dilated, you know. And so by getting your eyes to start to constrict and the pupils to close down, like, that's your built-in sunglasses. Mm-hmm. Because now less light is even coming into the eye and it's manageable, and you can stay nice and relaxed. There's always times and places for sunglasses, but yeah, that was like right when I stopped wearing my glasses full time and I would start going without my prescription glasses more often. I did the same with my sunglasses. I really started to introduce my system to more light exposure, and gradually, of course, you know, not shocking my system, but now I don't really wear sunglasses unless I know I'm going to be outside all day long, or I'm going to be out on the water and there's going to be a lot of reflection or something like that. Or, you know, I wear my snowboard goggles in the snow and stuff like that. But just for walking my dog or going to get the mail or even an afternoon out at the park or whatever, it's like, that's when your eyes need that full spectrum, healthy, balanced light.
And beyond just the eyes, it's your whole body physiologically as well, right? If you're tricking your brain to thinking it's darker than it actually is, then that sunlight is not going to be received the same way by your body.
That's right. I was really intrigued to learn about that. I went to an International Light Association conference in Croatia, and they were talking about how when you step outside in the sun, let's say you're at the beach, you got your bathing suit on, so a lot of your skin is exposed to the sun, your whole body is getting the signal that it's daytime, you know, it's sun, you know, let's produce the right kinds of hormones and all this stuff to balance the system.
Yeah.
But then you're telling your brain with the sunglasses, wait a minute, no, it's not, it's night. And so it creates this lot of confusion in the system, right? Of like, what time is it? You know, where am I right now? Right. So it's like really interesting when you get the eyes in alignment with the rest of the body, and the skin and the eyes are sending the right signals to the brain to respond.
Yeah. I've managed to phase sunglasses out of my life pretty much completely, because we think about this sort of stuff quite a bit. And my wife even mentioned it the other day, like, you used to wear sunglasses all the time. You used to say you always had to squint and you couldn't see. And I'm sort of realizing that it just speaks to how better adjusted I am now than I was then in a multitude of ways.
Well, let's not jump ahead of ourselves, Michael.
as he reaches for his readers again.
Right. Okay, Nathan. So how are your eyes now? How is your eyesight?
Yeah, it's clear. I haven't needed to wear glasses since I think 2014, 2015. And usually I say it kind of fluctuates between what I would say normal or better than normal vision. So like 2020 to 2015 to 2010, or sometimes it can fluctuate slightly less than normal to like 2025, 2030, sometimes 2040. And that's one of the sort of teachings of natural vision improvement is that vision is fluid, not fixed. It changes all the time, depending on many different factors, some of which we've talked about today, how stressed I am, how relaxed I am, how much light there is, how dim it is. But the Bates method has given me tools for those moments when maybe I have the 20/30 acuity or the 20/40. What can I do to swing it back to 20/20 or 20/10? So it still fluctuates, but yeah, it's amazing how well I can see without any glasses or contacts. When I think back to how my vision used to be and how kind of helpless I felt without those things on my face. And so, yeah, I sometimes have to kind of pinch myself, you know, when I'm having like a super vision day and it's like, I'm like reading that sign a mile down the road, or, you know, I'm seeing individual leaves on the trees. 'Cause that was like the first thing when I got glasses, I was like, whoa, like I can see the leaves on the trees now. I thought it was just a big blurry tree. And then when I started to take my glasses off, it's like, oh, there's that big blurry tree again. And then to start to get the individual leaves again through the natural methods was like, oh, like this is how I can get that without the artificial lenses too. So
it's incredible. I mean, it's truly inspiring. And when we do hang up, I'm going to sign up for your program. I already told Mike going into this, like, I can't wait to do it, because this is something I've actually mentioned on the show before. Like, this is something, a challenge that I put before myself to try to reverse this, you know, reverse my myopia, you know, without contacts or glasses. Like, I'd love to get there. And coming across your site was just, again, another pun, but just so eye-opening. And to, again, to read the testimonies, you go, wait, this is possible, because we're not taught it. No, I hadn't really, truly, before coming across you and your site, like, even known that such a thing was possible. It's just not taught to us.
Yeah, it's not necessarily served to you on a silver platter. And it's rare that, like, an eye doctor would, you know, invite you to look into this stuff. They are out there. I've met lots of eye doctors who embrace, you know, the vision therapy approach and things like that. But yeah, that's kind of why I like it, is that the people that I work with really are on a mission. You know, they've done their research, they seek it out, or it finds them.
Yeah.
And it just kind of comes at the right time. And if you don't mind me asking, do you happen to know off the top of your head, like the numbers of your contacts, like the diopters or the strength?
Like negative 2.5 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
'Cause usually, like, even before you start like really getting into the practices and the habits and the techniques and stuff, usually the simplest starting point is just not only taking more breaks from the lenses and spending time with the naked eye in a relaxed setting, but also maybe even getting a pair of training glasses that would be, you know, in your example, maybe minus 2.25 or minus 2.0, that now they're still helping you see a little farther away, but you're leaving a little bit of wiggle room for your eyes to start to come alive again and become more flexible and dynamic.
Yeah.
And then just like how you can adapt from dark sunglasses to light sunglasses, you can also adapt from full correction to slight undercorrection. Mm-hmm. And then within a matter of time, that feels like full correction. And then you're ready to drop down minus 1.5, minus 1.0. So it's kind of this like weaning back kind of approach.
Yeah.
As opposed to more of like a cold turkey approach.
Where I couldn't see the road if I just tried to drive without my glasses. Right, I'd be a liability out there. Mm-hmm. Nathan, really appreciate all the wisdom that you've dropped here. And I know I'm sure you've inspired so many listeners to check you out. Speaking of that, we're going to come to the end here. One of the questions we ask all our guests, what are your non-negotiables, the daily habits you do to tend to your terrain?
I actually feel like I already kind of shared one when it comes to my screen time. Mm. I don't work on a screen unless there's a YouTube video playing in the background. That at this point is a non-negotiable. It's that and also the blue light blocking software. So I use Iris.
Yeah.
So if I'm on a screen, because I work on a screen all day, you know, for the vision work, I work with people on Zoom and the online courses and stuff. I have to turn the blue light down to my comfort level, and I have to have my peripheral vision having a job to a function to perform. So that's sort of my non-negotiable, like before I sit down for a day's work, is like, what is moving in my periphery, and can I, you know, mitigate the amount of blue light, you know, direct blue light exposure into my eye? So that's kind of in context of like screens and computers. I guess the bigger picture, the bigger answer, the non-negotiable is also kind of like what we talked about before, is don't stare and don't strain and don't try too hard to see, because the moment you try to put the effort and the force into focusing, you get in your own way. And when I have the best vision, I can't even feel my eyes. I'm not doing anything. There's no effort. It's complete relaxation and automatic eyesight, just like automatic hearing, tasting, touching, smelling. Our senses are supposed to be going on in the background without us thinking about it. So that was kind of my starting point. You know, like I just have to catch myself straining, just have to catch myself staring, just have to catch myself trying too hard. And in that moment, back off, relax, breathe, close, blank, whatever, and kind of reset. Just kind of being sensitive to the vision habits that are present, as opposed to thinking of it too much of just like a set of eye exercises.
Got it. And where can the listener learn more about you and your work?
In terms of listening, there's a lot to listen to. I mentioned the Better Eyesight podcast. That's the more sort of historical journey where we go, you know, from the 1919 to the 1930 magazine. So we're like halfway through, you know, we're, you know, making our way month by month. So that's a wonderful way to go like straight to the source of who Bates was, what the Bates method really is, so that you get the actual picture of it. And then I also have another show, the Naked Eye podcast, which is probably maybe a little bit more like this one, more interview based and kind of bringing other practitioners into the mix. And both of those, and also my YouTube channel, I have a lot of free YouTube videos that teach a lot of the Bates practices, called Bates Method 101. So it teaches, you know, the swinging, the sunning, the palming, different ways to kind of get something up and running. And since I'm passionate about this being like easy for people to learn and understand, you know, I want it to be a low entry of barrier there. So, a lot of free stuff out there online. You can find all that on my website, integraleyesight.com. Oh, and also, we did actually put out a documentary about this. It's called Vision 2020, From Eyesight to Insight. And we did that right before the pandemic. So we actually traveled around the world and interviewed like over a dozen other natural vision practitioners. And released it in 2020. And so it's a really good way for people who they've never heard of this before to kind of get introduced to it. And it's also good for people who already know about it and they want to kind of go deeper and get other perspectives. So you can like rent that or purchase that online as well.
Awesome. And we'll put the links in the show notes. And again, I can't wait to jump into your program. And I guess here's the last pun. You'll be seeing me soon, Nathan. Nathan Oxenfeld, thank you again for joining us on the Terrain Theory podcast.
Thank you so much. This was a pleasure. It really flew by. Really appreciate you reaching out and expressing interest. And be happy to continue to answer questions or help you out along the way. Because, yeah, that holistic vision program is kind of the way that a lot of people kind of start sort of solo, where they're kind of watching the videos and trying it, following along with me in that format. Definitely reach out and let me know how things are going, or if you run into things that you're not sure about. But I'm sure based off what we talked about today, that some certain things are going to kind of jump out to you now that in a new way.
Yeah. Hopefully not a tree.
All right. Take care, Nathan. Hardy. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Great to talk to you. Out in the pioneer room, you have to
party, the after party in the pioneer room. You are in the pioneer room. The after party.
Okay, after party in the Pine Hill room. Mike, you look good in those readers.
They are pretty stylish, aren't they?
It'd be almost a shame for you to lose them.
Maybe I'll just get like clear glass readers just for the aesthetics of it.
Just for the aesthetics.
That's what my kids do. They like to wear glasses that have no prescription.
No kidding. It's like a thing. People
when
like
they were
want...
younger, they were into that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like
yeah. That's kind of a problem, right?
Definitely.
Like people are wearing it just for the aesthetic, but then maybe...
Well, isn't that where like the cult of sunglasses sort of was born in like the rock and roll era, Lou Reed and Bob Dylan with the black Ray-Bans? It's like people want to look like that, right?
Yeah. And then they end up messing up their sleep and their circadian rhythm and their eyes and everything else.
Yep.
Yeah, there's so many parallels. The parallels between Dr. William Bates and Dr. Weston Price.
Yes.
Like, let's study people with really good teeth.
Yeah,
let's study
that.
People with really good eyes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of overlap there. I wonder if they knew each other.
When was Weston A. Price alive and working?
Like early 1900s.
Yeah. Okay. Same era. There's this great, I almost brought it up during the chat, but I figured I'd mention it now. There's this really funny cartoon I saw recently of a guy at the eye doctor's office, and he's reading the eye chart, and he's sort of squinting. It's just a one panel cartoon, right? And he goes, D, E, G, A, Tom Petty, American Girl.
That's good.
That's the chart I'm going to put up in my studio.
Amazing. That's amazing.
Sorry, that's sort of a non sequitur, but
also one of my favorite songs.
Yeah, it's a good one.
It's like impossible to go through that conversation without like the puns, the like constant vision puns. It's remarkable how often you use language like reflecting eyesight and vision.
Well, and how central vision is prismatically to these existences that we inhabit, right? And just pointing out the optometrist and optimistic are so similar, and that sort of felt resonant to and obvious in many ways. But
no, Michael, that was very insightful.
Thank you.
Gotcha. We gotta stop. We just lost like 100 listeners.
Don't drive like my brother. I always think like we're clicking.
Don't drive like my brother.
We're like clicking. Oh, so good. Well, yeah. I just loved him. He was so gracious and kind and gentle and smart and wonderful. And that was just, I didn't know what to expect because often I don't. And really, really a wonderful chat.
Hey, you know, once we get into this terrain, the terrain space, and we really immerse ourselves in it, and the foundational belief being our bodies are beautiful and brilliant and like miraculous self-healing machines, you just go, of course there has to be a way to like reverse poor eyesight.
Yeah.
Like, of course there has to be. Like, wouldn't our bodies want to get back to that place where we can see clearly 20/20?
Right. And of course, this is coming on the heels of, I just took my son to the optometrist to get a dual prescription this week, and now he's wearing glasses. And of course, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, I know there's a natural way to address this. And then the whole conversation about, can you imagine if like this was the type of stuff that was taught in our schools? Like, it seems preposterous to even suggest that like good eye habits, good vision habits would be taught to our youth. But I mean, it's how criminal. That's added to the list of things that aren't imparted to our youth.
Glaring, just these glaring omissions, intentional or not. And the fact that you can't put an eye chart up in a classroom because it is a medical instrument. You're talking about a piece of paper with letters on it in diminishing size. And you're going to call that a medical instrument.
Yeah.
It's kind of wild. I mean, I suppose there's like a slippery slope that was being addressed when that notion came up, but it's something that I'm in already thinking, like, how do I introduce this into Grayson's classroom? Like, how do I have a conversation with his teachers to introduce some of these ideas and getting like the ABC chart and doing
or like a lava lamp or something like that. I mean, I always thought those were sort of silly, but now if there's a practical application, why not, right?
I'm looking at my environment. Like, yes, I have windows. I'm seeing, you know, I'll see cars occasionally go by, and like maybe if the wind's blowing, I'll see leaves and things like that. But otherwise, like, it's pretty motionless. I mean, he just introduced so many of these little, you know, I hate to use the word hacks, but
right.
Strategies for putting motion in your environment, because, well, cats. I mean, I promised Grayson a cat when he started school.
Cool.
I said, after you start school, we will get a cat. Now, I didn't tell him when after he started school, but I have been researching, you know, I got to get the litter box and all that stuff. But now I'm thinking, like, having a cat in the environment, just in the home, moving around constantly, is beneficial to your eyesight.
Yeah.
And all those little like tchotchkes that you can put on a desk, you see on work desks, like the two little balls that fling back and forth and hit the balls in the middle. Having one of those like right here in front of you now, it makes a lot of sense to do that.
Yeah, I thought those were all just sort of
parakeets, Michael. Gratuitous. Just fill this office space with parakeets that can fly free, yeah, all you know, behind my monitors.
That's been in a year.
Just a jungle. It's an absolute. I have monkeys hanging.
Ace
from
Ventura
vines.
Of podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And Ace Ventura did not wear glasses.
No,
just
and he had excellent hair.
Yeah.
He meditated too.
He did. Yeah. I got to go back to the eye doctor and get a. First, I have to like really stop wearing contacts, and it's hard. I guess it's not hard, man. Like the idea of going throughout my days, you don't do this. You've got the readers for reading, but otherwise, like when you're driving, you know, you're out working in the yard, like you don't need glasses, right? You're
correct.
Good.
Yep.
I like the moment I get up, I put my glasses on. And then there's a point in the day where I'm like, all right, I'm going to put my contacts in.
And then when my
contacts come out, I put my glasses back on. The only time I don't have my glasses on is when I'm in bed reading. And it dawns on me that there are so many more times through the day that I shouldn't have glasses or contacts in, that I might not be able to like see great far away, but I can like manage getting around the house or even like going for a walk or whatever, and just allowing my eyes to be in their natural state. And I haven't allowed them to do that for a long time.
So you could start working that, like if you're doing some gardening or some stacking some wood or whatever, right?
Yeah I don't need to like necessarily see accurately far away. I can just do my thing.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. I can't wait to start in his program.
There's so much wisdom also in, not going cold turkey, right?
Why would you do that? Why would you ever give up anything cold turkey, Michael?
That used to be my go-to, and I used to brag about how good I was at cold turkey. And I think... joke. But you know what I mean.
I'm joking because we both went cold turkey on caffeine. But continue. Go
ahead. I sort of phased it out little by little. You went cold turkey. I didn't go cold turkey.
That's true. Okay.
But anyway, I think there's wisdom in that, because I think you get excited about an idea and you just want to dive in headfirst and like make it happen and then almost like check it off the list. Like, okay, did it, done, move on. But like, I think things like this need a little bit more consideration. Especially how many years has it been since you've been beholden to contacts and glasses?
I was like 17, 18.
Yeah, like your entire adult life.
Yeah. And when I went to college is when I first got contacts, and then that was it. Because I was playing soccer.
Right.
It helped me so incredibly, like being able to see the spin of the ball on the field and like where your teammates' eyes are looking, like that. Those are really important prompts.
Totally.
And so I never look back. Like, so if I'm working out or anything like that, like I've just or running or something, I have my contacts in, but I don't need that. I don't need them in as often as I do. So yeah, you're right. I mean, it sounds like his program is a lot of like tapering and weaning and.
I'll probably be right behind you, but I do report back how it's going.
I will. And the exercises are obviously things that everyone can and should be doing, you know, the swinging. I don't know if you noticed, I mean, I could feel, it felt quote unquote, like that finger was moving, and same thing with the screen. And even when I was just doing my eyes, and I wasn't, you know, I was not exaggerating when I stopped that and looked back at my screen, like everything was really vivid.
That's cool.
Yeah. Well, anyway, okay. Onwards and upwards, I suppose. We got to wrap here because we got another one coming right up.
Yeah, double episode day.
It's fun. Is it fun for you?
Of course.
It's too much.
Who would I be without the Terrain Theory podcast? I don't even know anymore.
You have your own identity. Don't attach your identity to the Terrain Theory. You are MJMJR, the one and only.
No, I can't wait. I love it. You know I love it.
Love it. All right, folks. Nothing you heard here should be taken as medical advice, as neither Mike nor I are medical experts. Remember that you are light, you are love, and you are your provider. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you on the next one.